I'm gonna start the countdown now.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, that was pretty good.
We're never gonna get better at that.
I don't know why it's so difficult. I really feel like I don't know why it's hard, but maybe someone else should do the countdown once and kind of, you know, I will be the one to follow instead of to lead it, and I can see how hard it really is. Like, I remember the first time we did that, you guys were just like listening to me count down.
It was a disaster, and it will never stop being a disaster. We need a freaking metronome. Anyway.
Okay. Anyway, welcome to the 55th episode of the podcast. This week we are talking about the 8th episode of season 7, which is called Lies, Amplifiers, Fucking Twitter. Which obviously comes from Carrie's sort of mania induced rant at Maggie's house. And I was just thinking about the episode title before, and I was like, it makes me really happy that Carrie knows what Twitter is. Like, I know that you have to like have lived under a rock for like the last, you know, 10 years to not know what that is, but I'm also just like, I wonder what Carrie's favorite social media platform is. Maybe we could talk about that later. Because first we're going to talk about overall impressions of the episode. Ashley and Gail, what did you think of the episode?
I liked it a lot more than the last one, which had me curled up in my bed for the better part of a week. So it wasn't really a very high bar to clear. But I enjoyed it a lot. It was really interesting to me. I moved quickly. The acting was phenomenal. It was interesting. I was not bored at all, and I was not just mortified on Carrie's behalf, mostly. So I liked it. I give it a 11 Carrie Mathesons out of 13.
Yeah, after the slow-moving car crash disaster of last week, which was actually a very well done episode, it was just very hard to watch. This one almost felt like rays of sunshine, unicorns and rainbows. So I'll take it. I liked the episode. The Franny stuff is just really hard for me to stomach, truthfully. I liked the spy aspects of it. I don't know why they're doing all these Quinn type parallels, if not to maybe bring Carrie to a place where she like acknowledges him specifically, or has some sort of revelation.
Dante, to clarify,
yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Well, I want to talk about that later, like, because yeah. I had kind of an epiphany, I think, you know, this episode. Well, anyways, but sorry, continue.
Yeah, so anyway, I thought it was good besides that. That was the, or not besides that, also including that, I should say. So yeah, I thought it was a good episode. Wasn't as stressful, I'll take it.
That's so interesting, because I had the opposite reaction of both of you guys. Last week, for me, I was just kind of like, this was so, like, it was, it didn't affect me as deeply as I think it affected either of you. And this week, I don't know if maybe the realizations or the kind of reaction that you had last week, actually, it just took me like one episode longer and like a week more, because Sunday night, I mean, I was talking to you both. I was like distraught. I was really sad and really upset after watching it. And, you know, it stems a lot from the Carrie stuff, especially, you know, that Carrie Maggie scene at the center of the episode. And I didn't really like the spy stuff as much as you guys did, and so that kind of detracted from it too. But just the Carrie, Franny, Maggie stuff, like all of that, it was so like tragic and so upsetting for me. And you know, I'm not really someone who like doesn't cry a lot. Like, I've watched plenty of shows, This Is Us, Parenthood, where I like cry every single episode, just because they're just sort of tear jerky, you know, type of shows. But Homeland isn't really one of them, even though a lot of really depressing and bleak shit occurs on this show. And so I can count, you know, like the number of times that I've cried while watching the show on one hand. And like, this was one of them. Like, I was surprised, I think, how much it affected me. Everything after the Carrie Maggie stuff, to me, I felt a little bit like, I don't know. It was so, like, it was, like, nothing for me. I just couldn't sort of wrap my head around it, because the Carrie stuff was, like, it was just, like, this is so fucked up. Like, why is this happening to me? Like, specifically to me. Which is, like, it's like a feeling that I have about this point through pretty much every season, because, you know, usually this is Carrie's, like, lowest point. But, you know. Sunday night's episode was definitely a low point for her. And I think as someone who just watches the show so singularly for her and through her eyes, episodes like Sundays where she is just backed up against a wall, but at the same time, like, I just wish she had somebody.
Can I just circle back to that, your comment where you said you got past the Maggie and Franny stuff and the rest of it just didn't even register for you?
Yeah.
That is how 6/12 was for everybody, including you. It was after an Quinn episode... died,
you mean?
What?
You mean after Quinn died?
Yes, after he quote-unquote died. But that's how that was, and that was really
this
jarring.
This was different, though, because it wasn't marked by something where I was like, I can't believe that occurred. I mean, I wasn't surprised by the Maggie Carey scene. It was just the emotion and the weight of it, and, like, mm-hmm. just sort of sitting with that, it felt so heavy, and I was just like, fuck.
I didn't feel that way for this episode.
It's hard to describe. I'm not articulating it very well, I think.
No, I know, but that's just what I mean. I feel like it's easier to look at it in the perspective of 6/12, where something major did happen, and the rest of the show kind of was a blur, and that's kind of how it sounds like it was for you.
Yeah, it was definitely a blur, but it wasn't caused by something that I just couldn't believe or, like, left me in shock. It was just something where I was just like, how am I even supposed to watch the rest of it after having watched that scene between them? It was just like, what's the fucking point of this?
Imagine what episode 808 it's gonna be like.
Oh god,
let's just kill ourselves now. Maybe North Korea will just nuke us and, like, get us out of our misery.
No, I told you that if I die before I learn how all of this shit concludes, I will kill myself. So that's
okay, well, that will work out nicely for you then.
I know it's supposed to be, like, ironic. Okay, so I think we had, it sounds like, pretty different reactions, kind of on opposite sides of the spectrum. It's not like I disliked this episode. I didn't think it was a bad episode. It was just, I was just kind of like, I mean, I rewatched it this morning and I was like, this is good. Definitely not my favorite of the season and not my least favorite at all. But just watching it on Sunday night, like, that was difficult.
That was how I felt about last week's episode.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird because on rewatch, and maybe it's just because, you know, since, I mean, it was the Carrie Maggie scene that for me was really like, fuck. That was like, I mean, and two, it's the centerpiece of the episode. I mean, it kind of marks the halfway point, and it's one of the most, you know, up to this point might be, you know, the most emotional and most weighty scene that we've ever seen between them. And, you know, I don't remember what my point was. Oh, well.
Just it was the halfway point of the episode.
It was the halfway point of the episode, and I still don't remember. I'm sorry.
Okay, I tried to help.
All right. But, you know, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Carrie, Maggie, Franny of it all. I think we all know, I mean, it definitely wasn't a shock to any of us that Maggie kind of pulled out the custody card and kind of gave Carrie an ultimatum and said, you know, if you don't check yourself into the hospital tonight to seek treatment for your manic episode, I'm going to begin the process to take legal custody of your child. And I thought that scene was interesting because, you know, there's various scenes throughout the series where Carrie has to start in one emotional place and then kind of go very quickly to one that's perhaps the complete opposite of it. Mm-hmm. A really good example is from The Choice, so from the season 2 finale, when right after the bomb goes off and Carrie and Brody are in Saul's office and Carrie sort of wakes and she's immediately, you know, of the position that Brody is behind this, and she grabs the gun and she points it at him and he's like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "You did this. There's no other explanation." And he really, really quickly has to convince her that it wasn't me, like I wasn't involved in this. So she has to go from point A to point B in the span of like a minute. I mean, those are really two drastically different positions to have. Like, she has to be so sure that he wasn't responsible to basically leave with him, whereas the scene starts where she's so sure that he's responsible for this that she pulls a gun on him and she's ready to kill him, right? So, like, it's a very, very large sea change, not seat change.
That was a funny day.
Okay, right. For those who didn't know, I went for the first, like, 25 years of my life thinking that expression was seat change and not sea change. Because seat change makes a lot more sense. Like, she's literally having to move seats. But anyways, so it's a very large sea change. Anyways, and so this was one of those, right? So she starts the scene, and the minute that Maggie sort of brings up, you know, the – not even the possibility, but I think at this point it's kind of an assumption, I suppose, or, you know, accuses her of abusing her child, not, you know, out of any sort of malicious intent, but just because she's, you know, exposing Franny to situations that are psychologically and potentially, you know, that are abusive. And she's like, "That's not fair. You can't steal my child from me." And she's like about to run up the stairs, and Maggie's like, "You have nowhere else to go," which is both sort of physically true, she literally has nowhere to take her, and also psychologically true, she's really backed into a corner here. And so she really has to go along this path of, like, she has to go from denying that this is even going to happen and really fighting it, and then at the end to basically fleeing, right? So it's kind of like the fight or flight thing. So she starts it, you know, the scene wanting to fight, you know, against Maggie about this, and then kind of having to go in the complete opposite direction of, like, "Actually, you're right, I can't do this," and she leaves. And I think that scene was so well acted by the both of them, but oh my god, it was just so distressing. And I mean, I don't know, like, I definitely wouldn't have felt the way I did if it hadn't been performed so well. They're both so good. I read one description on Twitter of Amy Hargreaves, like, in that scene, it's like, you love her, but you also hate her, kind of. And I thought that that was a really interesting description, because Maggie's usually someone that's, like, really easy to love because she's kind of the voice of reason. She's the only real adult on the show. But kind of, like, once she's kind of turning and she's now being kind of, like, the truth teller in this, like, but she's also sort of, you know, proposing this, or not even proposing, but she's sort of threatening, you know, this action that will crush Carrie. And I think that it was the realization of how much this is going to crush her that I think really got to me the most. It sort of hit me like a ton of bricks. And, you know, the other thing that was upsetting is Carrie is still in denial, as we see in the very next scene with Saul. Like, she thinks that it's just really temporary, just for a while. I think we know at this point that it's not a temporary thing, and it's not just going to be something where Maggie just sort of assumes custody of Franny, kind of like how she did in season 5, you know, when she was sent back to the United States, or in season 4 when she was just looking after her while Carrie was away. Like, this is going to be like a legal thing, like in the court system. And I don't think Carrie understands that. And that's going to be fucking awful. And I think that was like the closer we get to, I mean, I think we can say it's going to happen in episode 10. Like, the closer we get to that, it's like the more upset I feel about all of it.
Well,
but at the same time, like, I can't say that Maggie's wrong. Maggie's right. Like, Carrie is putting Franny in these situations, and it was nice, I suppose, for Carrie to have that realization that she can't continue doing this, but I just wit like it still sucked.
Agreed. I view it, I think it's easier a little bit to view Maggie as the villain too, because as I've said many times, she pushed Carrie into this. I mean, Carrie made the decision to keep Franny. Carrie made the decision.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about this now.
Yeah, we are. We're going to talk about this because
it's relevant. Sure.
It's super definitely relevant. And Carrie would never be at this point in her life if Maggie hadn't just sort of worn her down. And I feel very badly about saying that. But at the same time, as I said in...
Are you basing this off of the, sorry to interrupt you, but are you basing this off of 312 when Carrie says, like, I can't do this, and Maggie's like, yes, you can. Is that what you're basing this off of? Or
yeah, pretty much. Okay. And then the next time we see Maggie, she's shaming Carrie for being exactly the kind of shitty non-present mother that Carrie said she was going to be.
Well, Maggie does also say, you know, this is not what we agreed to.
I know.
In that same scene. I think that they just had, I think probably what happened is that, well, this is what I think what happened. I mean, I agree with you. I feel like I don't know if I brought this up on the podcast or on the blog or whether it was WhatsApp or whatever, but like Carrie predicted this exact situation, and no one knew better than Carrie that, you know, she just didn't possess the qualities to make her, you know, the type of mother that I think we'd all want for Carrie to be. Which is present and available and loving and, you know, puts her child, you know, ahead of fucking Saul. Like, Jesus Christ, evaluate your priorities, Carrie.
She loved, who loved her, was telling her to keep it.
I know, yeah. I don't remember if we talked about this in the pod last week or maybe the week before. I don't remember, but okay, good, we did. But...
I was napping.
Right. Ashley wasn't there. But I still think we can recap. But, you know, I think probably what happened is that, I mean, yes, Carrie predicted this. Maggie and Frank really, I think, kind of guilted her, including Quinn, too, did as well. But they kind of guilted her into keeping the child. But I think Carrie did on the condition that Frank said, you know what, I will be the... caregiver for your kid. You know, if you say that you can't do this, I'll do it. And then she was like, are you serious? Really? And so I think that she kind of was like, all right, Dad, now I'm leaving. And then Frank wasn't really around. And so it all fell to Maggie. And so from Maggie's eyes, it's like, yeah, this is not what we agreed. We did not agree that you would go and leave to, you know, fucking Afghanistan, which is a war zone, while I am not only, you know, basically a primary caregiver for our father, because he lives with us and I support him and he depends on me, but also your infant baby, because again, our father, like, you know, doesn't really have the, you know, wherewithal to do that. I think it was a giant clusterfuck of a situation, but I don't necessarily, like, I don't know. I think that it was just never a good idea to begin with.
It was never a good idea.
Well, all that being said, though, the reality is that, you know, Franny is now 4 years old, and it is what it is at this point. And I do think that it's fair to say that Carrie will never live up to the expectations that I think Maggie has for her.
Good point.
But I do think that, you know, in order for... I think Carrie to kind of realize like what matters most and all the stuff in her life. Like, it almost seems like she's being stripped down to the studs here to hit her rock bottom, because clearly it's coming. I mean, they didn't set up this mental illness storyline this year for her all of a sudden to get it under control with street drugs. So you can see that with this Franny storyline and the street drugs and the lithium networking and Quinn's death, I think, kind of hanging over her with some of this other stuff we'll talk about coming up. It's all not good. And I think in her heart, you know, I think she definitely loves Franny. There's no question about that. Yeah. But for me, I think the storyline for me is hitting on, she has never been both things at once in Homeland since we've seen her with a child. We've seen her, you know, ignoring her child in season 4 when she is the drone queen. And then we've seen her dedicated to being this other person and being a mom in seasons 5 and 6. And now we see her back in this mission mode again. She has never been both things at once. And she's never, you know what I mean? Like, it almost seems like she just isn't in a space where she can do that. So,
but I also kind of
think that maybe she can. Oh, I was just going to say that I think that maybe she can later on, but this is the first – well, I should take that back. Last week, I think – the reason why I think it hit me so hard is how you felt this week, Sarah. I think that hit me last week, the reality when the FBI came into that room, and I think why I was so jarred and upset was I was like, oh, my God, this – like, she might never get Franny back once she loses her. And that reality hit me last week, and it was only reinforced – this week when Maggie's now like threatening, and Maggie's gonna follow through. I do feel, and my last point is about Maggie, not that, and I agree, she's right on every level, but I'm also like, part of me is team Carrie when Maggie is saying things like, you know, I have to report this and, you know, all this stuff. I just almost feel like Maggie is not trying her best to smooth this over at all, like, for the two of them together.
I'm going to disagree with you, because so here's what I have a few thoughts. I think it's indicative of the way that we watch the show that you were so sort of upset by what happened last week, whereas I was upset by what happened this week in the same way that you were last week, because I'm watching the show through Carrie's eyes. And so it wasn't until this week that all of this really dawned on her, if that makes any sense. It's like, okay, oh, yeah. Right? Anyway, so – and two, like what you said about she is going to lose Franny and she may never get her back. Like, Carrie is – I don't even think that that thought has crossed her mind. I think she thinks this is just temporary. We're just gonna have to figure out kind of what's going on with this. Then we can fix it and then it'll be better. And, but two, it's this thing of like, first one thing and then the other. Like, you're right. She can't do both. It's the first time that she's been really tasked, I think, with doing both. And she's not succeeding by any means. I think she's failing pretty spectacularly. But at the same time, like, I think we need to leave the door open for the fact that Carrie, well, first, I think we need to like begin entertaining the thought that Carrie is going to lose Franny permanently and will never again have custody of her child. And second, that she cannot do both. She's incapable of doing both. And I don't think that that's a commentary on women overall. I don't think that's a commentary in saying women can't be really great at their jobs and really great mothers. I think Carrie specifically. And I don't think that Carrie represents all women at all, you know, and she doesn't represent all people with bipolar disorder. And she does like Carrie is not that. I think Carrie is unique in every single way. And I think that they're telling a story about Carrie, and Carrie is someone who can't do both and perhaps doesn't want to do both. Sometimes I just think that she doesn't really give a shit. She just is like, this is it. It's not important enough for me to do both, because I feel like Carrie is determined and smart and wily enough that if she put her mind to do anything that she can do it. And I don't really think that she wants to do both. I don't think it interests her. And I think that she knew that, you know, exactly like Ashley said, she knew that when this was happening. And but, you know, in true Carrie fashion, was in denial for so long, but also had these kind of delusional dreams about like what this would be when Brody was alive, and then it was too late, and, you know, all that stuff. The second thing that I'll say about Maggie, just, you know, I wish that she could smooth this over. Like, I think that she kind of brought up this of, well, I'm a, what's the right word? We see it all the time on the Legal Aid, but what is it?
Mandated reporter.
A mandated reporter. Thank you. We see it all the time on the Legal Advice.
Legal Advice Reddit.
Reddit. Right. Exactly. So Maggie, as a medical professional or clinician, would be a mandated reporter. So if she saw some sort of abuse going on, she has a professional obligation to report it to the authorities or whatever. I don't really think that she would have done that. I think that she just said that, okay, this is my excuse for bringing it up, is that I'm legally obligated to do that. She had the sort of negotiated plan, was just like, I have the suitcase for you. Here's what we're going to do. Either you do this or I'm going here. So I don't think that she, like, I don't know. I think that she really, really, really thought 100% that Carrie would be like, okay, I'm going with you to the hospital right now. She was, I think, shocked that Carrie even had to think about it. And then, of course, even more shocked that she left out the front door. Like, I don't think that Maggie ever thought that Carrie would do that, actually. Which is surprising, because...
But do you think Carrie on her... Do you think Carrie on her lithium... I think Carrie make on her lithium maybe makes different decisions here too. Like, if it's working.
No, I don't know.
See, that's where I disagree with you, is I think she has an interest in doing it. I just don't think she
Carrie
knows
on
a
her
way
lithium
forward
in
yet.
Mission mode? Yes. I think probably maybe would have walked out that door. Probably.
Well, Carrie,
I don't think she would have.
Mission mode would never have gotten to this point.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, that's fair.
I think this goes differently if lithium's working, and now that it's not, like, it's compounding.
But I think that just
the situation.
I still don't think, though, that Maggie ever expected Carrie would walk out that door. I don't think Maggie, that she even, like, thought that that was an option.
I agree with that.
Maggie,
I think that I think you're right.
So fucking badly to be better than she is, and this has been the case since episode one.
Yeah, that's yes. really interesting. Like I don't remember.
Not, like,
I don't know.
She mothers she her. Like, she wants more for her.
She really.
I don't think she has high expectations. I think she has unrealistic expectations. She has expectations that do not match reality in any way, shape, or form. Like, she's lived with Carrie, you know, like, she's known her for her entire life. And I guess I'm just. I don't know. I don't want to make excuses for Carrie, but at the same time, there's a fundamental disconnect between them, where Maggie
Absolutely.
Just can't comprehend the way that Carrie lives her life, and in some ways punishes her for it.
Well, I can honestly kind of get that, because Maggie grew up as the only, like,
responsible one.
The only psychologically stable person in her household.
Yeah.
Because her mother was cheating. We don't know what her mother's background is. We know that her sister
her
and
mother's
her father both
selfish narcissist, probably.
So for Maggie, she saw what the bipolar disorder did to her sister via Frank, and what their mother's abandonment did to them both. And she responded in a very normal way. Like, she grew up, she was responsible, she did exactly the opposite. She became a doctor, someone who treats mental health disorders. And I don't blame her for looking at Carrie and being like, what the fuck is wrong with you that you are responding in the way you are?
Me neither.
Like, even if she knows.
I don't blame her for it. I just think that I don't blame her for it. I think it's interesting, as someone, like, she cared for Frank. Like, Frank lived with Maggie for probably the last 10 to 15 years of his life. She was around Carrie and she was exposed to that. It seems a little bit like she's surprised that someone who is not medicated is acting in irrational and, you know, unexpected and surprising ways.
Right. I love Maggie so much.
I love her too. I don't mean this to just be like a Maggie sucks and, like,
no,
why is she being so mean to Carrie? I think she's doing
normal,
the right thing. I just
ways.
Think that the storyline this season between them is not black and white. And I think that people are wanting to view it in that way, is either, like, Maggie's totally in the right or Carrie is. And we talked about this on the pod last week. Gail, because you mentioned that you were kind of annoyed with her because the way that she was talking to Carrie, it was kind of petty, you know, the way that she was bringing Franny into the situation and kind of developing Franny as an ally, you know, which was a follow-up ask that we got. And, you know, I agree that, like, Maggie's in the position right now, or, you know, she has been in the position, you know, through the course of the season to be able to calm some of Franny's anxieties about her mother, and she's not. She's kind of exacerbating them, in my opinion. And you can call that petty, you can call that inappropriate, irresponsible, whatever. I just think that the scenario, like, the story that they're telling is really interesting. And there's a lot of wrinkles and there's a lot of nuances. And, you know, I think that's why we're not so on, you know, one side or the other. It's kind of like, well, I can see it from both of their perspectives. I think that's a testament to the writing and definitely a testament to the performances, because they really, like, they are making you kind of empathize with them. So as much as that scene really fucked me up more than, you know, many scenes have, you know, all season, it was really, really well done, I think.
Yeah.
I also agree. Kind of, it makes me think, okay, I just lost my train of thought. Go ahead, never mind.
Your turn. What do you guys make of the scene? So, another sort of moment follows this kind of big fight there. Carrie walks out of the house and there's this like really cool crane shot, you know, where they go up from up above and then they pan down to Carrie in the car and she lets out this like rageful scream. What do you guys make of Carrie's sort of like, what's her mindset in that moment? Because we've never really like, there's, I think that Carrie, you know, does have a temper. She is an angry person, but we've never seen her like scream like that, that kind of unmitigated rage. What do you think was kind of going through her mind in sort of, you know, in that moment?
Well, I think it was one of the first moments in Carrie's life where she is so out of control. Because Maggie is making a lot of excellent points, and Maggie, whether or not she should have been calming Franny's anxieties or making things better or just trying to help out, which, by the way, was what I was thinking before. Like, at what point does Maggie need to just stop it and say, you know what? Like how much does she owe Carrie to be covering up her shit? But I think that for this, Carrie is caught between a rock and a hard place. It's one of the very first times in her life where she has to make a decision between two things that are antithetical to one another, like where there's no real way to win. I mean, you talk about like all of the stuff that Carrie's ever done, like there's always like a potential upside to it. There's no upside here.
I think you're right. I think in that moment, all the walls are closing in on her. And, you know, Carrie, who lives in a perpetual state of denial, I think, of things that are too emotional for her. Like, I think she always puts off dealing with some of that stuff and puts it off. And I think in this case, a lot of that has snowballed on her this season. And it comes to a head with that scene with Maggie, at least on the Franny Maggie front. And it's almost like the legs on the chair that she's sitting on are being knocked out from underneath her one by one. And in the car, I think she allows herself to, like, you know, vent that emotion, all of it. And I think it's complex. I don't think it's just rage. I think it's everything. I think it's just everything that's happening to her is so overwhelming. Because when things happen to the country, and we've seen Carrie kind of react over the season, she takes it so personally. She feels like she truly believes in her blood that this is her born, sworn obligation is to protect the country. And, you know, when she's telling Maggie that you don't understand, like, the our democracy is under attack, and you know, I'm working with Saul. Like, it is that mission and Franny in her mind in that moment are just, she's trying to deal with what's most immediate and most pressing, and she does not view Franny as the most pressing problem right now. And when she gets
to
the car,
which is so heartbreaking.
Yeah. But when she gets to the car, I think you see that all of that emotion that she's been, you know, pushing away and trying to, like, you know, I'll deal with this later, I'll deal with that later, it's coming to a head, and you see it in the car where she just can't hold it in anymore. And I don't necessarily, like, I don't think it's just rage. I think that might be part of it, but I think it's everything.
I don't know about you guys, but I have, I have been in that spot where I'm sitting in a car and I'm just screaming because I need, like, a place to...
I know. Everyone has that moment. I've
like
never done
valve.
It in my... Well, actually, no, I have done it in my car. Let me tell a
I
very
do it
quick
in my car
story.
All the time.
Let me tell a very quick story. Pretty recently this happened. So I was moving from Wisconsin to New York this past fall, and I drove a U-Haul, you know, the entire way, halfway across the country. And so it's like the final day of driving, and we are using Google Maps to get to my apartment. And so we're in northern New Jersey, and Google Maps says that you need to be in the lanes to get, you know, on the George Washington Bridge to go to the lower level. And so I was like, I don't really think it matters, because one time we were driving back from Vermont, me and Ashley were, and we were definitely on the upper level. I was like, I don't think it matters. Like, I don't really think it matters which level you go on. I think
we can
go on the upper level.
Too.
You're right. She was there. So, you know, you can be on the upper level or the lower level, like, it doesn't matter. And you know, we're not a commercial truck, so, you know, I don't really think it matters, but we followed all the instructions to go into the lower level. And so you get up and, like, you wait in line, and we have one of the smaller U-Hauls. It was like one of the 10-foot ones, which is like one of the smallest sizes you can get. And so we get up into the toll, and, you know, we're about to pay the toll, which is like $15 or something like that. We roll down the window, and the woman's like, "You're in a truck." And I'm like, "It's a U-Haul." If you didn't, you know, read the sign in the truck. And she's like, "That's a U-Haul." She's like, "You're not allowed to go through the lower level." And I was like, "What do you mean?" We're on, so there's like 10 lanes to pay the toll to get into the lower level of the George Washington Bridge, and we're on the far left one, which means that if we can't go into the lower level, we have to cross through like all the lanes of traffic. And I was like, "Wait, but what do you mean? This is just like a U-Haul, and we've paid like all of the regular toll throughout like the entire way coming here." And she's like, "Do you know like what happened on this bridge, or like what happened? Like, for all I know, you have like a bomb in the back of your truck." And I was like, "Do I look like someone who has a bomb in the back of their U-Haul?" And then she's like, "You can't go through here." And I was so upset, because we had to turn around and make U-turns and stuff to get onto the path to get onto the lower level. I was so fucking upset. And she calls up to like one of the sort of police officers or whatever who's monitoring the lanes of traffic to get onto the bridge. And so, you know, once again, we're at the very far left lane, so we have to cross through 15 lanes, and I felt like such an idiot. And as we were crossing, I let out this huge scream. So I was with my mom. My mom was in the passenger seat. I let out this like rageful scream that was really similar to what happened in this episode. And then I started crying. And then the police officer was like, "Are you okay? Like, you're not going to get a ticket. You're not going to get arrested. I'm not going to cite you." And I was like, "Don't talk to me." It was so embarrassing, and it was so upsetting. So that's my story about rage screaming in a car once trying to get into New York City.
And now you live there.
And now I live here. That's it for story time.
She has a really big couch with just the entire reason she needed a 10-foot U-Haul.
All my stuff fit into that U-Haul, so.
Yes, I know. I wish I had that problem. Anyway, so we should probably move on to the spy stuff. because we only have half an hour before.
It's true. Does anyone know how, like, is there anything else we want to discuss kind of on the Carrie, Maggie, Franny front?
No, because I'm sure this is a horse we're going to beat to death. I know. I was like,
it's not
going to
be the last time we talk about this, for sure. This is not a problem that's going away. Like I said, I think episode 10 is called Clarity. And I think that Carrie's
going to
get a lot of clarity.
And also, Amy Hargreaves told us in
her interview. She said that it was, what did she say? It was like the best and
most. It was like the best and worst scene she would ever have to film.
Yeah.
And you and I were just like, fuck me.
Fuck. Great. That's exactly what I want to know. Okay. So, all right, let's move on to everything else in this episode. And there's a lot to cover. So we have the Carrie Dante sort of interrogation, the Carrie Saul stuff. They're like finally sharing scenes again. They shared more scenes in this episode than they have, you know, this entire season. We also have Wellington and Keane doing this sort of like backdoor Russia, you know, angle that blows up in all their faces. Simone and Yevgeny, so like the Russians are, you know, working their own angle. And then of course the poison pen that backfires in Carrie and Saul's face. So I think that the theme of everything else in this episode is everything backfires. So let's talk about the Carrie Dante scenes first. So they set it up to be, I think, really similar to Q&A. So, you know, the very famous episode from season 2 where Carrie and Quinn interrogate Brody and Carrie ends up turning him. They do that good cop, bad cop thing. I thought that this episode and their scenes in particular had a lot of parallels to Q&A. Some more obvious than others, but, you know, Carrie plays both the bad cop and the good cop. So she starts out and she does the bad cop and she lays out all the evidence and then she leaves and kind of lets him sit there with that. And then she does the good cop thing. She attempts to do the good cop thing where she, you know, attempts to relate to him. And I think she was actually being sincere in those scenes, talking about, you know, how I know what it's like to love your country and not have your country love you back. And, you know, it's so painful to be on the outside after you've had sort of the taste of what it's like to be on the inside. I really loved that scene and kind of what Carrie was expressing there. And I loved Dante in those scenes too. I loved that didn't crack him at all. Like, he seemed really unfazed by all of it. Like, there was never a point where I was like, seems like he might turn. Like, I think he was just like, this is not going to work. And I liked that because it just wasn't so easy, which is why the ensuing, like, I know, let's get him a fake lawyer and have this lawyer give him a pen that contains some sort of poison in it that, you know, causes his or that will cause him to have a heart attack. But we're going to have the antidote like right at the ready. And then, of course, that back for, I was just like, this is so stupid.
Well, because he wouldn't take it. Like, Carrie was trying to give him something for it and he wouldn't take it because he didn't trust her. And why should he?
I don't think that was the antidote.
Well, she was
antidote.
Trying to give him aspirin.
That wasn't the
that
antidote.
Had nothing to do
the
with
antidote
it.
Was the mm-hmm. antidote. Well, that was still when she was like pretending that she didn't know, you know, exactly what was happening. And I thought that was really interesting because Claire has to play both. I know that, you know, he's been poisoned, and I know, like, it was very rehearsed and very overly dramatic in the way that Carrie would attempt to do that as if she was faking it. And then when it turns and the medic was like, his heart stopped, and then she was like, fuck. And then that was like actually Claire acting from the standpoint of, well, now she's just Carrie as opposed to Claire acting as Carrie acting. I don't know if I explained that right, but it was just interesting. Like, there was definitely a shift in that scene in the way that in the performance from Claire after Carrie stopped performing. I didn't like that development though. I thought it was really silly. Like, I lived through the BlackBerry pacemaker thing and this was worse than that in my opinion. I was like, this is dumb.
Well,
I thought
well,
it was dumb.
Gail and I are both long-term fans of Everybody Who's Not Me Drink 24. So suspension of disbelief is not a problem for us.
It wasn't the suspension of disbelief. I believe that they could have procured that, and I believe that Carrie could have convinced Saul, and they could have found a lawyer. Like, they could have done all that. It just felt like that whole development happened within the last, like, 10 minutes of the episode. And
yes, I know. We watched 24.
I don't know. It just felt – I didn't like it.
I see. I loved it. I got to be honest. I thought the whole thing was done well. I think the reason why she didn't crack Dante is she went at him the wrong way. I think, you know, number one, her plan to break him was flawed because you can't be the good and the bad cop. I actually think the closest she had to getting him nervous and maybe to spill was when she was just like, and here's the evidence and here's your travel. And when she was playing it all hard-assed after sitting there and listening to him like come at her, yeah. I almost wish she would have said something like, I had you all along. You think I'm off my meds, motherfucker? Like, I wish she would have kind of went that
Ooh,
way.
That would have been,
I think,
so good.
She would have scared the shit. She would have scared the shit out of him.
Yeah, she definitely didn't. All with the good cop stuff. But I liked that.
No.
But I liked those scenes anyways because I thought it was revealing of, you know, Carrie's own
Yes, safety. Her mindset. Yeah. Yes. I thought, I agree. I think those scenes were fantastic. That just wasn't the way to crack him. The way to crack him was to get him to shit his pants. And she stopped short.
Yeah. She really needed to kind of turn the tables. Because, I mean, the reason, I don't know, like the reason he kind of, you know, leaving aside the fact that he's been singularly obsessed with her for the last 3 years, she was also weak and she was vulnerable. And, you know, that would have been really, I mean, the dynamics of their relationship of what we saw in the first 6 episodes was like he was kind of looking after her. And so he had the power, and that was the dynamic of their relationship. So if she would have, you know, flipped that and twisted that to been like, I've had the power all along, you didn't fool me.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I still liked it. Like, I think something that I really respect about this show, and that I do grudgingly respect about the Poison Pen, which is what I'm going to call that for now, is that, I mean, I would have hated that whole poisoning thing a lot more if it had worked and he had just sort of, you know, reacted right away to the antidote. The fact that it didn't work and it blew up in their faces was like, seems about right. Like,
yeah,
it serves them right.
I
too
like that part of,
like,
it too.
Serves them right for
it
taking
does.
A shortcut and then having it blow up in their face, and then the Simone stuff, like, you know, it's definitely, there was an irony to the fact that they believed that once they got anything out of Dante, they just had to get Simone, and then they lose Simone and they're about to lose Dante. So they go from kind of, you know, thinking that they're on top of the world, and, you know, as Saul calls Keenan Wellington, and he's like, I have good news, finally. And then, like, 10 minutes later, it's like, fuck. Like, I do appreciate that about the show. Like, it wasn't that easy, I guess. So I do respect that about the story. I just didn't really like that it was so last minute.
Well, and let's point out a couple of things, too. So, Carrie, we've been getting asks, like, or I've seen comments, like, how is a civilian allowed to come in and interrogate him? Well, number one, she is a former intelligence officer. She's not just a civilian. But also, she's a part of Saul's team now, just the way she was in season two when she was, like, in an off-the-book
operation. Right, she was
operation.
Not in the CIA in season two when she interrogated him.
Exactly.
Rose. No one was talking about that then.
No, same kind of thing. And, you know, then some people are like, well, how, you know, like, how does Saul have this jurisdiction? Well, for those who don't know, like, he, not only is he the NSA advisor, but he also, he's got basically the ability to interact with any of the intelligence agencies and, you know, throughout. So, you know, it's not unfathomable that he has deep resources now. And it's not unfathomable that, you know, he has at his disposal these types of chemical or, you know, agents or whatever, because
it was her idea. Well, I guess we don't know. They didn't really show us. It was definitely
her
idea,
right,
to get a fake lawyer. My guess is that something that's interesting about that is, again, it really parallels what happened with Quinn at the end of season 5, but Dante falls and she sort of runs off right away to to the room, and Saul stops her. I thought that was really important. That seemed...
He wanted to scare Dante. He was letting it
right,
build.
It seemed reminiscent yeah. of, you know, both their disagreement, I suppose, about whether or not they should wake up Quinn in season 5 at 5:11. And then when they do, you know, when they do, I know I thought that scene played out kind of similarly, too, when they wake him up from the coma. And Saul's kind of off in the background, and Carrie's the one who has to be really up close and kind of exposed to this really horrific situation. And then she kind of retreats again. Like, Saul, he's always wanting to let it build and let it get to, like, a moment. You know, we can always just wait a little bit longer. And who knows if they had, like, if you know, she'd gone to him 5 seconds earlier and they had administered the antidote 5 seconds earlier, maybe he would have, maybe his heart wouldn't have stopped. Don't know.
This show is such a beautiful disaster. Like, I will always, until the end of my time, be grateful to this show for bringing us together, for giving me some of the very best friends I feel that I will ever make. But god damn, do I wish I could have, like, made these friendships without it.
So I think that in some, for me, interrogation scenes between Carrie and Dante, great. I agree with Gail. Carrie went about it the wrong way. But I think that they were trying. I buy that Carrie thought that that was the best way, because it did work with Brody. It did work with him. She right. did a
well,
lot
yes,
of the same thing
with her.
She did a
she
lot
had,
of.
She had, like, somebody else playing bad cop.
I don't think that it was just you can't play both good and bad cop. I just think that Brody and Dante are really different people. Dante's a lot stronger than Brody ever was. You know, he has a lot more conviction.
Well, and he's also an FBI. Well, he's an FBI agent, and I think
he's trained to resist
something that Brody
like
didn't.
Those kinds of things.
He's
yeah,
angry.
Too.
He's super angry, and I don't think Brody's as angry at that point when she's breaking him down anymore. He's just
yeah.
tired.
But
so it's just very different.
It followed cycles. A lot of the same beats. Like, I noticed too. You know, when she's playing good cop and he's kind of literally backed up against a wall, and you know, she's like, why don't you just be honest, like, it's not too late, we have the ability to undo all this. And he looks at her and he's like, okay, let's be honest. And then he kind of goes off and he's like, this is what I remember, and actually you did this, and you wanted me to be the whistleblower. And you can see it kind of all unraveling, you know. And even Saul, like, they cut away to Saul and he's like, fuck, like, this is not going well. But I thought that that moment was, it was like when Carrie was so close to breaking Brody, and she's like, wouldn't it be great if you could just tell the truth? And she knew that he was wearing the vest, and he still wouldn't relent, and he said, I wasn't wearing a vest. I thought that that was kind of the parallel moment of that. I mean, they even did the thing too where, like, the lawyer turned away the cameras too, which is exactly what she did when she got into the room with Brody. Like, there were a lot of things mm-hmm. that were, like, really similar.
Well, even how he was laying on the ground on a side.
Yeah.
Like that, it was, like, just how Brody laid down afterwards.
I mean, it was.
And yeah.
I think that those were all extremely intentional too, but.
And his hand had the pen ink on it, kind of like Brody's hand.
Yeah.
Had the knife go through it.
Absolutely. I mean, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It yeah. was definitely, I thought those were all intentional parallels, and it just went a really different way. But, you know,
you
talked. You
guys are going to have a really fun director's chair this week.
You talked, right. Gail, at the beginning of the episode about, like, the Quentin parallels. And so, you know, mm-hmm. as I was watching mm-hmm. this episode, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of the Q&A parallels, I thought that Dante seems more like Carrie, or Dante seems more like Brody to me, to Carrie, than he does to Quinn. And so the only real sort of Quinn parallel I get is just that he ends up in the hospital after they kind of put him in mortal danger. But were there other things you were sort
yeah,
of clinging
I guess
into?
The Quinn stuff for me was more of, like, how Saul and Carrie have basically compromised another mm-hmm. person's life in a similar way. And just kind of how, you know, I know I saw some posts too where people are like, you know, Carrie ignores Quinn, you know, in season five for like 9 days, but she goes rushing into Dante, into the interrogation room. Well, let me just say, for one, that was a whole play. She ran into that interrogation room to get him to confess, and she played up, you know, the heart attack.
Was she like
thing,
not so supposed to go to the
be scared
ED with him?
Well, I don't know, but I guess, like, for me, when I was looking at that, I was like, oh, you read that scene wrong. Like, she rushes in there because it's all part of the play. Like, she's trying to get him to, like, mm-hmm. flip and the information. She's not going in there, like, out of genuine concern for him. They just literally poisoned him on
they
purpose.
They poisoned him,
like,
but they also thought, I think that totally she is different. Concerned for him, actually. I'm going to disagree with you. I think they poisoned him fully thinking.
No, I don't mean, like, she's not rushing in there, like... Let me separate. That's not what I mean. So, like, when Quinn, you know, dies in 612, like, they're like, she didn't touch him or whatever. Like, it's not that she didn't have concern. It's just that it's part of the play. Like, if he, like, randomly just had a heart attack, she probably would have went in there, but maybe not, like, as urgently. But she goes rushing in there. It all adds to convince him.
But they do need him to be alive.
That he's being
she
poisoned
does have
by
a
the Russians.
She does have a vested interest in him being alive. In the final moments of the episode... Yes. You know, I want to talk about that because I thought that was a really interesting scene. I'm not really sure kind of like how we're supposed to interpret that. But, you know, Saul calls her and's like, Simone's gone. We don't know where the fuck she is. Fucked up again there. Wellington and Keane shot the bed. And she's just like, we're in the ER. His heart stopped. You know, it's back up again. But, you know, I'm here right now. And he's like, tell me that. He's going to make it or he's going to be okay. And she hangs up the phone and then the nurse says, okay, we need her to leave. And so she's like, okay. And it's all nonverbal from that point on. You know, after she hangs up the phone, it's all nonverbal and she kind of walks away. And then she turns around, looks back at Dante as this team of clinicians is, you know, trying to save his life. And she has this face, which to me, I kind of interpreted as like, I don't know exactly how to interpret it, but I got whiffs of like, I can't be here right now. Like I like psychologically can't be here right now. And also just kind of like, this wasn't supposed to happen. This isn't where I was supposed to be on a completely meta level. Kind of just like, what the fuck? And then she turns around and she literally steps out of focus. What do you guys make of that scene? I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, parallels that with Quinn in 512 and in the episodes leading up to it on purpose.
What do you mean? Wait, sure. What do you mean? What parallels?
Just the parallels of him being in the hospital, unable to speak. Like, she needed information. Mm-hmm. She needs information from Dante. She needed information from Quinn.
But I mean, specifically, the final
I think
Carrie moments in that episode.
Well, I think that she sees it and
she's seeing the parallels of like this happened again.
This happened again.
All right.
But, I mean, they didn't
I get that too.
Accidentally
yeah.
over the first like half of the season, they didn't set up intentionally making these Quinn parallels and making her trust Dante the way she did with the same kind of. They made a lot of really obvious moves to make us and Carrie think that she could trust him the way that she trusted Quinn, the whole bipolar thing, the fact that he was helping with her meds, the fact that she was telling him about Franny. This is all stuff that Quinn knew, and Dante was saying all of the right things to her.
Right.
That's not an accident. So she has this whole setup. We set up the first half of the season where he is being presented as her new confidant, and then...
You think in some part of herself that she still views him that way?
No, I don't think that.
I guess I'm not understanding your point. Like, specifically, what is Carrie in those final
moments? Whether or not she still
moments,
views him that way, that's still... She still has been, like, feeling that for a while. I don't know how she's feeling at the moment. But I think that Carrie...
If you had to guess, though, what would you say? In the final moments...
I think that she just...
As she's
I think
leaving.
That she just sees this happening again. It's just, it's deja vu for her.
But
whether
why would
the feelings
but,
associated with the same?
But I think it's interesting just, though that You're right. They do set up the parallels of Dante and Quint, like where, you know, wanting to trust him, wanting to believe, you know, that he's a good guy because of all the reasons that you stated. And then he turns out to be the opposite of a good guy. He turns out to be a horrible person to her specifically. And now we're like, don't trust him. And so I think it's weird from a story point of view. I'd understand if it was the reverse. If it was, well, Carrie did this to Dante, how could she do this to Quinn? Because Quinn was so much better. But Quinn comes first. Dante comes second. Does that make sense? It's not like Dante was a better person than Quinn. So it's like, how could she have done this again? Dante was a fucking shithead. Like, I understand the Quinn and Dante parallels. But in relation to Carrie being like, how could I have let this happen again? Like, why does Carrie give a shit about Dante?
I think it just brings up memories.
I don't think she does.
Okay, so you think it's more just like recalling bad shit. Okay, yes. All right. Okay, that makes more sense to me.
I agree with that too. I think that I don't think she gives a shit about Dante the way she did about Quinn or Brody. I just think there's some parallels there because I think you're right. I think it's bringing up memories that, once again, I think she has just been living in such a state of denial for so long on so many fronts that all these things, you know, the similarities between them, they have, it's almost like they're ghosting her. Like, they're just all around her. It's in her face now. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think her, the clock is ticking to her
it's
reckoning
like the
here
worst
with all of it.
Like,
she's going
to
have
like
to deal with it.
It's like the worst form of deja vu for her right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of the way that I saw, I mean, because like the facial expressions that Claire had in that scene, I felt like I recognized. I felt like it was a little bit like, ooh, like, and maybe that was sort of, maybe that is kind of her deja vu expression of like, again, like I'm going through this again. In the timeline of the show, all the stuff that happened with Quinn at the end of season 5 was less than a year ago. So it's not been a really long time. And maybe it was this kind of really bad deja vu. But I think it was also a little bit self-reflective of like, how am I here? And that's encompassing the entire episode. That's encompassing the whole thing. Like, one thing I noticed throughout this episode is they filmed Carrie at multiple points from above, from like a bird's eye view. They did it when she was walking out to go to Maggie's house right before, you know, she takes the meds on the street. It was a really odd camera shot. We don't really see those kinds of bird's eye views, especially of Carrie. They did it again as she was walking out of Maggie's house. They did that crane shot. And then they did it, you know, as she was treating Dante. And I guess, like as I was thinking, okay, that's three times that they did it. Must be intentional. Why are they filming Carrie from above? And I'm wondering if it was just kind of like, here is Carrie. Carrie is here. Like, take in everything that's around her. This is who she is at this moment in this spot, and this is how she's acting, this is how she's behaving, this is what her life is. And I could be totally just like making shit up right now, but I thought it was interesting in that scene that she's in focus, you know, as she turns back to look at him, and then as she walks out, and then she very quickly steps out of focus of the camera and of the viewers and of the audience. So she's very briefly, you know, we can see her clearly, and then she's blurred. We don't really know who she is. And maybe that was,
well, earlier in the episode they do that too. Did you notice when like Dante, like when she first sits down at the table with him to interrogate him, and he starts kind of laying out about the drugs and stuff, and then he, you know, the camera tightens on his face as he's like talking to her, and he goes blurry. And I
they did it
feel
too,
like
when she was standing in front
just
of the wall too. She was in focus, mm-hmm. and then they sharpened the focus behind so that we could see the wall. But I was kind of thinking about it just in terms of like thematically, symbolically, what does this mean? And I could just like, this could be totally off point. They'd just be like, we just thought it was a cool shot, which, you know, it was a cool shot. Like, it was a good shot.
Right.
But, you know, we see her very briefly in this moment of having this sort of, I think you guys are right. I think it's like a really bad deja vu experience. It's bringing up a lot of really bad memories and a lot of guilt kind of sort of rising to the surface. And then I also think it's just like, I think she just has this realization of like, what am I fucking doing? And what is this? Like, 12 hours ago, I was fighting with my sister who said she was going to take my kid away from me. I walked out the front door. This guy who, this side of 3 days ago, you know, I thought that I could trust, you know, perhaps more than anybody. And, like, look what I've just done. And he wasn't who I thought he was. I thought it was just kind of this, like, what the fuck is, like, my life right now? And we see it very briefly for just kind of a flash of a second. And then she steps out of focus. And then it's all blurry. It's all blurred. And, you know, we're kind of left wondering, okay, well, what's going to happen next? I thought it was a really interesting thematic way. They don't really do, like, it was very stylistic, you know, in the way of, like, well, there was slow motion too. So at the very end, it's like slow motion. She turns and then she turns away. And then the sort of blurred effect as she walks out of focus, like, they don't do that kind of, like, fancy camera work a lot on this show. So I felt like it was probably more meaningful. And so I felt like I was like, I could, you know, like, I could put on my AP literature hat and be like, what does this mean? But I don't know. Maybe I'm off base.
I have no idea because I never notice any of that.
That's why you don't do director's chair, Ashley, though.
Except when there are cabinets.
Except, right. Or refrigerators. Right. Except when there are things placed inside of boxes.
Things.
Yes. Okay. So.
So we need to wrap up.
We do need to wrap up. We very quickly need to talk about, I think really, really quickly, we can talk about the development that Simone and Yevgeny are secret lovers, or perhaps not so secret anymore. And I think we got an ass. I was like, Simone gets around. And now it's like, what's up with them just revealing these secret romances? Last week it was Wellington and Keen. Not that I think that's been like a secret romance that's going on, but just revealing that like there are love feelings between these two people. And this week it's Simone and Yevgeny. Yeah. Like that came out of nowhere too. I was like, huh, okay then.
Yeah.
Yawn. You don't care.
I'm not into it, I guess, because I know some people are like, oh, I ship them now and there's not much else to ship. I like, dude, like, number one, they poisoned and killed McClendon. Number two, like, they just killed my boy, Yvonne.
You're just bitter about Yvonne.
To drown.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm bitter. Because
he's the dentist of all the dead ones. So I don't ship them
whatsoever. But also, hey, like, this is not the Americans. This is not Carrie Russell. So, like, they are not good. Like, we're not rooting for them. Do you know what I mean? Like, no, I am not here for that ship. No way.
I don't need to, like two people personally to be like, I want them to fuck.
I am just, like, so confused at all of these Russian men who are like, I love you, but go fuck this other guy, like, just for a little while. Like, Yvonne did it with Allison and Saul, and now Yevgeny is doing it with Simone and Wellington. Like, what is it with these Russians and, like,
I think they must be really secure in their own ability to keep a woman, that they can just be like, go off, and I know that she'll come back to me.
Just, like, go bang it out. Like,
if you love something, let it go. If it comes back, it's yours forever. If it doesn't, it never was. So.
Okay, but, like, that's, like, that doesn't, let them go, but don't tell them to go mash intimate parts together. Like, just, that's weird. Oh,
all right, so Gail is not a fan, Ashley is confused, and I'm like, take it? I could take it. I don't really care.
Can I also make one more point, though, about flings? I think that from Dante's reaction to Carrie when she walked into the interrogation room, I think we can safely assume that Dante did not ejaculate into Carrie and therefore impregnate her, or else he'd be in a much better mood.
Oh, you think he had blue balls on top of everything else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think that Dante's... I think Dante is going to be the father of Carrie's next child thing. I think that is misplaced.
I would literally barf. I would literally barf if that happened.
I just think he would have been in a much better mood if he had gotten off. As would Carrie.
I stand by my gif of Eliza Schlesinger, like, throwing up after looking at her phone. Like, I stand by it. No way.
It's not going to
happen. Not doing it. Nope.
Are we playing a game today?
Oh, I had a game in my head, but I once again forgot what it was.
Here, I got one real quick. So we've got all these people that have just like shit the bed on multiple levels this episode. Who do you think is the first one who's going to get a small victory the next episode? Like, who do you think is actually going to be like, oh, okay,
Saul.
I'll take it. Like, who?
Saul.
You think
Saul?
Think
it won't be Carrie.
You guys can't see me, but I just rolled my eyes really hard.
Well.
It's definitely not Carrie. It's definitely not Carrie.
Maybe it'll be Bill Matheson or Bill Dunn. Bill's done, by the way. Bill's completely done.
Bill is so done with everything. He's so done with Carrie. He puts a Dawn in Dawn.
Oh, you're so witty, Sam. Like, I bow to your wits.
Who's going to enjoy a small win? Okay, we didn't talk about this, but I find it highly fucking hilarious that Wellington and Keane thought that they were being all, like, really helpful, sort
yes.
of being firm with the Russians, and they ended up fucking everything up. That was hilarious to
Ten
me.
Ten times worse. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. It was so, so funny.
I enjoyed that.
I think that Wellington is definitely the useful idiot from...
You want him to be this idiot,
but
so
he
bad.
Also is a useful. Well, I think the thing is, I don't know how he's going to be useful. He's just an idiot. I don't really know about the useful part. But who's going to enjoy a small win? So the people who are like really down in the dumps are Saul, Carrie, Wellington, Keane, who
and
else?
Dante,
and Dante. I think that Keane is going to enjoy a small win. I think that they're going to get a little like Keane. Her stakes are really high right now. They just asked her to resign this episode. I think that Keane might get a really small win and that she might get Paley and all them off her back about resigning.
Because Simone's gone.
Right.
So.
Well, no, because they'll, and then they'll probably have to go to Paley and say, and here's why she's gone and here's what's going on.
I mean, now it's definitely obvious that she's a Russian operative. Everyone fucking knows that. So maybe Keane does get a little bit of a small win at the end, but they still don't have, like, I don't know whether or not they have, like, enough proof. Everyone, it seems like, was played. So I think Keane might get a small win in the next episode.
No, I think it's going to be Saul, if only because Saul is... Yeah, that's all I have to say.
I think Carrie's going to go back to Maggie's to get her bag of things, and she's going to walk in on Bill and Maggie having sex. And I think Bill's going...
Serious prediction?
Ejaculating is from Bill. I think Bill's getting a win.
All right.
Are we done?
I think so.
We're done. We're done. We're as done as Bill Dunn.
Yep.